Welcome to the Stay Informed podcast. I'm your co-host, Jessica Gonzalez.
And I'm your other co-host, Tom Oshowitz. Today, we're going to talk about the value of consortias in solving industry problems. So what's a consortia? Typically involves a group of companies that are trying to solve a system-wide issue, often under the coordination of another company.
This is particularly relevant because I think within the industry of financial services, we've consistently said that there is a need for consortium data from a fraud perspective, but also from an industry standard to make the banking community better as a whole. So I'm really excited to hear what you have to talk about today, Tom. Can you give a couple examples of consortium data?
Sure. In fact, there really are a whole cluster of consortia in financial services. This is a technique that our industry has really adopted to solve collective issues. Let me start with sort of the big kahuna, credit bureaus. You know, over the last 100 years, lenders have cooperated to come up with a global view of how people use credit. And that cooperation and that consortia has been through, you know, the national credit bureaus. There's also checking credit bureaus, and there's check cashing credit bureaus, and there's payday lending bureaus. So really, that's one area. A second area of consortia is something that we do all the time. When you go to a local store and you use your credit card, that's part of a consortia too, which is this giant network of information that allows people to use transactions online. Another one is transaction fraud that you see when you pay your credit card and you get a call from your bank saying, hey, was that a fraudulent payment? Did you pay twice for that item? Or did you suddenly buy 27 TVs in Texas? I mean, those are the types of things that is based on consortium data. And the last one, just to give you another example, is it's not just restricted to companies, but the government can get involved too. There's a database organized by the federal government called the HMDA database. And it's basically a collection of mortgage information that's used to get a collective insight into mortgage information, and particularly for fair lending. And I think the key point here is that in each of these situations, a company contributes information to a network and they get something more back. It's really an example of a win-win.
Great. I love that. I feel like everyone loves the situation of win-wins, especially when they're thinking of sharing information, sharing data. How can one benefit, but also the other industry as well benefit? So let's also talk about fraud, because that's another point of whenever people think of consortium data. And what do you think is really important, and how does this information stop fraud from happening? And why is Informed so well positioned to partner for this information?
Well, I think one thing is that it's frankly basic simple arithmetic. Companies totally get it when you talk about a fraud consortium, because it's really a classic example of a place where consortium is needed. First of all, you know, companies don't compete on fraud. You know, one lender is not going to get more profits because another one is having more fraud. And in fact, it might be the opposite, because if you're not aware of fraud going on elsewhere, you can lose more money. The second thing about consortium is that the more data you have to fight fraud, the better you're able to do it. And no company, you know, how big they are, has enough data to get a global view on fraud. Another point is from the cross-industry perspective, right? You know, there are credit unions, there are small dollar lenders, there are large multi-line banks, there are captive lenders. Each one of them has a view, but they don't have a view into what's going on in other industries. And so the issue is, if there is a fraud happening in one part of the industry, you want to know about that as fast as you possibly can. And along those lines, one of the things about fraud, especially in this era of, you know, high tech and things moving so fast, there's an issue of, you know, you want to catch it early, because it could be, you don't want to be the first one. And the more that you can have a network to identify risks, you can get what I would say inoculated against the fraud before it goes too broadly. So Jessica, I'm going to turn the tables back to you and say, hey, you know, we at Informed are in the process and have already built a fraud consortium. You know, why are we so excited about our future in this space?
From my perspective, I think, you know, and I talk a lot about this, is giving opportunity to be more transparent to a consumer as well as lenders. I think it's really important from a perspective to understand how your data is being used from a consumer. But also, you know, we talk about we want to be quicker, faster, have all this data and be able to make better decisions. And I think from the fraud perspective, we can make better decisions, but we also can be able to say, hey, this person we thought maybe historically was risky, or maybe they didn't have any data, utilizing more more data enables us to open up the market so that we're able to get better decisions for those that historically didn't have the opportunity to have maybe a more seamless experience, less friction, and maybe they were required to provide more information than was really necessary that made them feel uncomfortable to begin with. So I think the opportunity to not only have more data to get better decisions, but also be more transparent with our consumers. I think that a lot of people, even from like a credit scoring perspective, how can I make my credit score better? There's all these different tips and insights, but if you go and talk to somebody that says, I'm really trying to get a 550 to 600, what are like a couple of steps that are very tangible? They're a little bit lost in, because credit scoring is kind of that secret sauce. Everybody does it slightly different. It affects a bureau differently every time. So I think part of the responsibility with the consortium is that we are kind of leveling it across the industry from our fraud perspective of saying that these are the fraud metrics that we're using and making it a standard KPI, because everyone kind of defines fraud differently. We have the ability to really make sure that across the industry, they have a view of what that fraud consortium data should entail. And then also the opportunity to open up credit policy so that they can maybe deter some of the fraud. An example of that would be somebody that has a very high fraud rate, but very historically low losses. Why are these consumers feeling like that they need to create a fraudulent document when they are having the intentions of paying back their loan? Maybe there's some instances where the credit policies can be expanded or have an opportunity to say, you know what, we don't need to create this friction for this consumer. They are a really great consumer. What data elements can prove that these consumers are going to pay back their loan so that everybody from a risk management perspective, as well as consumer perspective, can feel comfortable with that decision process.
And I would just add to that, I think you were saying a little bit that we, at Informed really are fiduciary and caretakers of our clients' data and protectors of the customer. And one sort of unique aspect of our work is where we sit in the credit cycle, where the visibility that we have into the marketplace. We are in a place where, frankly, we can help, right? We are looking at applications. We are looking at the point where fraudsters would wield their tricks of their trade. And so we have a place where we can, in a very concise way, help both consumers and lenders. And so, that's one area where, if you're in the right place at the right time, you got to do what you can to help.
Exactly. And I think to that point, we are the right people and the right company at the right time. And I think from the perspective of, the basis of AI models is that you need large data. We need large amounts of data to train our AI models to make sure that they're accurate and having the correct SLAs. And so from the process of creating document intelligence, making really great decisions with really strict SLAs, doing all of this firsthand annotation work, we've already kind of laid the groundwork, if you will, to be a really great provider to have these industry standards. I think the second part of that is that we have the right kind of intelligence. I don't think that, banks and financial services maybe have the right, employees or even the right skill sets to be able to go out through here and say, what are these data and these variables? Even if you have really distinct decision science teams, they're really focused on what they should be focused on, right? Like the BAU process of how can I make credit decisions better? How can I utilize this data to make their products better within their organization? Rather, we can really take this as a holistic approach and really focus on how can we make this as a community better for across, like I said, from the fraud perspective, and making it more holistic in the approach that we're doing versus, they should, everybody in their day-to-day job should be focused on making their organization better, their products better. And, that's a full-time job. Who has time to really be focused on this? And so it's really great that we have decision scientists that are really focused on this, machine learning engineers, that it is part of their day-to-day job to find these analytical pieces to add into the algorithms to not only make our product better, but also make the industry better.
Just to echo that, one thing I think is really interesting is sort of the link between the knowledge and skill sets of machine learning engineers and fraud, right? Because when you're looking for fraud patterns, you're looking for a signal in the noise. You're trying to find some sort of commonality. And that's, when you're looking at machine learning engineers, it's the same way that you are taking very, very large data sets. You're trying to find common patterns. And so the exact same skill sets you need to be a data scientist to build machine learning models are very translatable to, finding anomalies and other types of things in fraud. And the other thing I would just say, just to add, and I have to put in, I apologize, I have to put in my little legal comment in at some point, is that, you know, when we're talking about data, this is sort of the lifeblood of companies. It's entirely important to consumers. It's entirely important from lenders that this is protected. And so one thing that we've done at Inform is we've really worked hard to make sure that we collect the legal rights, working with our clients to make sure that we are operating in a way that everybody is comfortable with.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, like I said, historically financial services and organizations struggled with, because one, you don't want to be the first person that says, this is what we're doing, right? Like I said, everybody's focused on their BAU, focused on their products and organization, and you don't want to be the one that is raising your hand and saying, I'm going to be the first one within the industry to create a consortium data. And like I said, most of the lenders don't even have the opportunity to truly do that because they're not seeing all the data from across multiple areas. And then secondly, I think, you know, having your expertise coming from the CFPB, having the understanding how we can do this from a legal perspective is really critical. And I think that's one of the ways that we've been able to, from a privacy perspective and a legal perspective, make our partners feel comfortable with the way that the data is being utilized, because one, we are very secure in the data and the privacy terms that we're doing for our lenders as well as consumers. But I also think the aspect of making sure that, you know, we've dotted the I's, crossed the T's, and you know, we do care about the legal perspective and the compliance perspective. So thank you for the hard work that you've done of making sure that the language in those, you know, consortium data is really trued up so that we can really feel confident. I think that what we're saying is true and that there would not be any problems, rather solutions for being part of the consortium.
Well, thank you. And, you know, frankly, you know, and I personally am just really excited about this, because I almost think when you think of consortia, it's like putting like a little bit of extra armor around your company, that when you're working with everybody, you're just making it a little bit harder for fraudsters to look at you. And frankly, you know, if one door is locked and there's three bolts on it, and there's another down the street that's wide open, people are going to go down the street. So, you know, we're trying to make sure that folks who are collaborating get the benefit of that collaboration. And I guess one thing, before we, you know, sign off, I thought it would be useful just to give people an example of the type of fraud we're already finding in our consortium. So, Jessica, I don't know if you could give any examples of the type of stuff that we're seeing that is making our customers so excited.
Yeah. So I think, from the perspective is, we are seeing more synthetic bank statements. What that looks like is, you know, Jessica walks in, I provide a bank statement to prove my income, and it has my MPPI information, so my name, you know, address, so forth, and all of my transactions. We're seeing a number of synthetic IDs or synthetic bank statements where somebody comes in, they may have kept the bank statement and changed some of the transactions that are not, you know, adding up correctly, different fonts, different texts. And then in addition, somebody could be using a true bank statement, changing the name and address and some of these MPPI information, and then submitting it as their own bank statement. So we've seen both of those frequently, and we also see that it does go into bad actors. So it's really the true intention of misrepresentation in those instances. A lot of times when we talk about fraudulent pay stubs and their template base, you could say, hey, I'm trying to provide income, show income that I'm receiving, I'm self-employed, or I have a business, or I'm, you know, a contractor, but I am making those data, and maybe, you know, you just don't accept bank statements. And so they're downloading it feeling like that's the best process for them. So we do identify those as well. But I think from a consortium level, the bank statement ones are really interesting because, like I said, when a consumer doesn't understand why they have been rejected, you know, they're going to, the first instance to think is maybe I didn't have enough income. In reality, that's all actually not a big indicator of why most of the time they're going to be rejected. We see time over time that somebody would have been approved with the income if they had not manipulated it. They just felt like they had already been not approved by one lender. So they're coming to another lender, and then they're making changes on that, you know, bank statement, or they're providing a falsified bank statement and to a new lender. And then they're using the consortium data. We're able to see that. So lender A that first got the bank statements, maybe they were true and they were Jessica's and they were all correct. And then they were rejected for whatever reason, they had a decline. And then they went to lender B. They're now changing transactions or submitting it with a co-applicant and submitting falsified information. When we see that, then, you know, lender B may not have been aware of what they were submitting in lender A, and now they have information. Once again, you know, that would be probably a decline, but then you also have the ability to improve, like, what is the process and why are these situations occurring? What's another benefit of what we're identifying is things that are historical trends. So understanding the landscape of the data, how fraud is changing over time, how is the impact of credit policies changing the effects that we're seeing as an industry over fraud. So I think that that's a lot of different complexities that we're able to look at versus just saying, this is my data, I have a lot of data and it's really useful. We see time and time again, there's a lot of additional trends and lift that the consortium data can provide to a lender outside of their initial scope. So I think synthetic bank statement is the top one, but also kind of the trends of consumer performance, right? And, you know, kind of in auto, there's a trend that we say that, hey, once somebody stops paying insurance, they're going to go into collections. And so kind of the same thing with bank statements, when somebody gets declined and they come over, there's certain behaviors that they're going to start implementing to try to get that approval, because ultimately they want a loan, they have the intentions to pay. So how, as us as an industry, can make sure that we're making those adjustments? Is it getting them into a different car? Is it moving them into a more transparent, contract or negotiation trend? What is the right, getting that? We want to sell cars. We want to sell, mortgages. We want to say personal lending, credit cards. Like, how can we make this fit into it? So I think the fraud perspective is really great, but also that consumer behavior is really critical on being able to expand the industry best practices.
I really love the example you gave of bank statements, because I think it also reflects both the past and the future, which is that, already we're finding things in bank statements, but think about from the perspective of generative AI and the risk that lenders have as documents are more and more easily manipulated. And so to some degree, when you work with a consortium, you're not only protecting against today's fraud, you're protecting against tomorrow's fraud. And that's just really, really exciting. So I can't wait to learn more about, what the analytical teams are going to find. But one thing is clear to me is that when it comes to fraud, it's a team effort. And so we look to work with you, our partners, and other folks who are interested to grow our network so we can help stop fraud in its tracks. And that's all we have time for now. Once again, I'm your co-host, Tom Oshowitz.
And I'm your co-host, Jessica Gonzalez. Remember to stay informed. Thanks, y'all.